coming? Because usually Friday night for youth is, you know, when I was growing up. Is there any 17-year-olds here? No? Don't be shy. I have a son who's your age. Yeah, wow. So anyway, my name is Jaron. I still like to call myself part of youth. I love youth. These guys are the next fucking coming. So, since I've taken a journey, I've always wanted to talk to youth because, you know, when I was a youth, it was really, really hard for me because I think I was the only Asian in my school. And when I first asked this girl out, I said, you know, I was just wondering. I didn't know what love was. I just want to start with that. So I just asked her, I said, you know, will you go out with me because, you know, I really, really like you. Oh, thank you. But I know what love is, you know. If I give you all my money, and if I had new shoes, if I had a haircut every week, you know, and I was really trendy, and I hanged out with the cool and the tough guys, you know. That's love, isn't it? Oh, thank you. And then she, like, avoided me completely. Now, when I was growing up, I think it's still, it hasn't changed one bit, you know. Being a kid and also, you know, well, having a Christian faith can be very tough, you know, you can be persecuted. And that's why I encourage you, man. It's a really good turnout to see you here on a Friday because I have Christian friends and every now and then I turn up and I used to be scared to share it. So it's really good to see you here because I used to be a fragile, I still am. I'm only human. When I used to take things wrong, I used a lot of heroin. By the time I was 14, I started using heroin because I thought it was the right thing to do. Using heroin back then used to mask everything, gave me confidence, it was my way of life, I couldn't do anything without it. By the time I was 16, I was on charges for trafficking. They kept me on bail till I finished year 12. When I finished year 12, on bail, I was sentenced to 5 years in prison. So, in a way, I didn't know what love was. So I tried taking things into my own hands and making my own way, not knowing what love was all about. And just wanted that sense of belonging. Now, coming here, like, seeing all these guys going to drill tonight, right? Wow, there's a sense of belonging. And, you know, he's to bowling and stuff like that. Like, wow. You know, and you guys, like, all together on a Friday night, and, you know, that's amazing. And that's really something I must encourage, because what I did when I was a kid, I used to be angry at the world, and that's what the devil wanted. I used to put walls all the way around. And I used to put myself by myself, you know, with this drug, who I thought was the answer to everything. But in the end, it took all my 20s out of my life. I'm 35 now. All my 20s are sitting in between these four walls, who I thought was the right thing to do because my family was also included with my trafficking charges, thinking that it was the right thing to do because that's how I was raised. When you're raised, like, you guys get a different upbringing, which is really awesome, but when I was raised, it was okay to use and dabble with drugs, and, you know, that's like self-harm, but it was the only thing that I knew, so I used to run with it. And even though my first sentence ended in 2004, by 2006 I was back to my old self again. Because that's all I knew, so I thought it was normal. And it took a while. My mother, my grandmother, they go to church a lot. My grandmother used to get lost. So on Sundays, I used to drive her to church because one day she was leaving church. We lived in an Asian area. She used to follow cars in front of her. Like, oh yeah, if I'm lost, I'm going to follow that car, I reckon. And that's what she'd do. And one day she rang me up, in Queensland there's Brisbane and Gold Coast, and they're like an hour apart. She ended up halfway down the Gold Coast. She followed the wrong car. So, you know, she rang me up and she goes, oh, I'm in this place called Coomera. I said, what are you doing down there? I followed the wrong car. I'm from church. So, you know, that was like God's touch going, come on, Jaron, come back. But what I used to do was I used to just drop her off and go to sleep in the car park. And then one day the pastor said, hey, do you want to come? I said, well, I don't know. I put this grandma kept praying, kept praying, kept praying. And then one day, I was released in 2013, so 4 years for, there was a home invasion that went wrong. I was sitting in the car, and I was back to my old self again. I was hanging around with other people that I grew up with. I was working on a trawler thing. I was like, okay, the money was okay, accommodation was cheap, and I was on the way. I was on the way to buying a nice car and things like that, but the lifestyle was completely out of whack. So I finally came to Melbourne. I came to Melbourne in 2014. I got involved with a youth group and a church over on the western suburbs, which is like overseas to here, right? There's a difference in everything I've noticed. and then I got to find out what love was. I got to find Jesus. And it's amazing. When you have that encounter, even when you're searching for it, sometimes when you look back and the penny drops, like, oh, and then what's going to happen is when Jesus came into my life, these walls, they started getting cracks, and the walls started coming down, and I started, you know, one thing with this culture that we're sharing right now is no one's going to judge you. It doesn't matter where you come from, how you've been, or how you even got there, because when someone's down, you help them up. Love is patient, love is kind. That's what Paul wrote in Corinthians, and it's never about, you know, getting marks or you know, glorifying the wrong thing, but it's for the right thing in Jesus' name, and that's what it's all about, sharing, and because I can't speak for yous are at a different age level to me, yous can speak amongst each other, you know, I can't speak that language, I can encourage you, be with you if I walk down there, but I haven't walked down there. But Jesus has shown you how to do that, how to share your testimony. Everything's here in the Bibles, you know what I mean? And it's the right lifestyle, because that's what it teaches us, how to be graceful, being merciful. And if it wasn't for Jesus, I wouldn't be up here. Like, I cannot talk in front of you. Like, up here, if anyone wants to talk, like, right now would be really good, but this is really nerve. Like, all eyes, like, and sharing a testimony is not to glorify how bad or how mean or how much drugs I use, but it's because before I was written off, but now I've come through, and this is amazing. I might not have the, like, I love RX-7s, all my friends know that I'm a rotary head, but because I've lost my license and things like that, complications. But through Jesus' culture, I'm more happier to do this in front of you guys. I'd be actually really scared instead of sitting in an RX-7 losing my license and getting into a lot of trouble. So being in here, I encourage you, because, you know, your age, like, coming youth, you know, when you go through hard times and you encourage each other, be there for each other. You know, instead of kicking someone down, you're helping someone up, because that's what I used to do. And then when you get through that path and you go, wow, pray on it together, and you've been through hard times, and when someone else is down, the two of you will help each other. That's what this fellowship's all about. I can imagine, you know, being a teenager is really, really, really tough, because it can either make you or break you, or you can try and make it to you, or you're going to try and fake it. It's like, it's all trial and error, you know. But in this fellowship, you know, when he's all going out to eat together and someone's been through that, you know, you can vent to them, you know, and all become one. And that's what Jesus wanted, to be part of this church together. And it's amazing. Like, all your faces, like, it's something that's just unbelievable. And I really appreciate you having us down here, because, I never thought I would have gone this far. And if it wasn't for God, I wouldn't be here. I was written off many times. My family's found me blue. Just recently, I lost a friend. But if it wasn't for the culture and the upbringing and what we've been through and what we share tonight, you know, I'm still here standing. And that's what the devil wants to do. So don't try and punish yourself and take it and handle it alone. There's people around you here. And the culture that we share is to help each other. You know, show love, be patient. And it's something that it's not to get notches on your belt. It's something that you give with love and grace. Because what did Jesus tell us? And that's the amazing love that I've found, and I'd love to share it with you guys. So thank you for listening.
remember. But I'd like to share with you from God's Word. It's Mark chapter 10. And it's a story you probably will know. I'm going to read from verse 46 and 52. Jesus and his disciples reached Jericho. And as Jesus and his disciples left town, a large crowd followed him. A blind beggar named Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, was sitting beside the road. When Bartimaeus heard that Jesus of Nazareth was nearby, he began to shout, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." "Be quiet," many of the people yelled at him, but he only shouted louder, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And when Jesus heard him, he stopped and said, "Tell him to come here." So they called the blind man. "Cheer up," they said, "come on. He's calling you." Bartimaeus threw his coat aside, jumped up and came to Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked. "My rabbi," the blind man said, "I want to see." Jesus said to him, "Go, for your faith has healed you." Instantly the man could see, and he followed Jesus down the road. Now, how many of you heard that story before? Yeah, okay. More than half. Well, let's just break this up a bit. There's a blind man. He's been there, I don't know how long, but for a long time. His name is Bartimaeus. And here's that Jesus has come. Now, he knows that Jesus has healed him. He's been in that road begging every day for years. So he goes through this kind of reasoning. Well, here's Jesus, this is my only chance. If I don't get hold of him now, I could be sitting here for the rest of my life. And so he starts yelling out, "Jesus, have mercy on me." And yet Jesus has been used to healing people. And sometimes they friends of a paralytic they couldn't get through the door where Jesus was, so they pulled the roof apart and let him down on his bed. So this is not a new scenario for Jesus. Not the first blind man. So, Jesus does a very strange thing. When Jesus heard him, it says, he stopped and he said, "Tell him to come here." So what's wrong with that? And why wouldn't you take those extra steps and go to a healer? Why does Jesus do that? And he's by the way, you put yourself at his feet, in his shoes. You say, okay, Jesus wants me to go to him. There's a problem. I'm blind. I guess there'll be people that are going to help me to get to him. Another reason why Bartimaeus is just disturbed by this, because everything he owns is there with him. See, his cloak was important. For a blind man, or for anybody really in those days, a cloak was something that doesn't really, our style just doesn't really explain it. But a cloak had many uses. If you're caught on the road, it was a blanket. In his case, he could make a little tent out of it. It was a shade. And not only that, when people were throwing coins to him, well, that was his wallet. Jesus, I was ready to go to him, but to do that, I'm going to have to leave my clock here. Hang on. Oof. It's all a clock. That's my security. His clock was... Okay, it wasn't... Money-wise, it wasn't worth a lot, but for him and his state, it was everything he had. It was his security. It was that everything. It was those things. Because we all have cloaks, not literally. We've all got those things which we huddle in and they keep us secure. It's all we've ever known. And wow. And then Jesus says, "Come." Bartimaeus is saying, well, yeah, but hang on, the clock here. It says here, he threw aside his cloak. So this struggle's going on. He's saying, yeah, but, okay, all right, hang on, I'm gonna leave that. Someone could steal it, do what they want with it. I'm going to Jesus. Now, we've got our cloaks. Those things that we cling on to, where we sit huddled and relatively secure. Now, it could be possessions. Do I follow Jesus? Yeah, but wow. If I follow Jesus, everything that I've ever thought saved up for, maybe I haven't got a say in that anymore. Maybe Jesus got other ideas. Well, hang on, I'm not sure I'm ready for that. Jesus is calling me, but do I really want to leave that? Do I really want him deciding what I do with my money, my future? There might be a relationship. Jesus said, come on, follow me. Yeah, but what about her? I mean, she's my girlfriend. And he's my girlfriend. And hang on, wow, yeah, why? I might lose them. You know? If I follow Jesus, I might, maybe that he or she doesn't feel the same way. And Jesus said, come. Tell him to come. Another thing could be reputation. Well, if I follow Jesus, what are people going to think of me? I don't need to seem to be weirded out, you know. I want to sort of. Your identity. You're willing for that. You're willing to say, okay, this is right now, this is okay, it's not much, but it's everything that I have, it's everything, it's my security, and it's everything I've ever known. If I leave that, if I cast that aside, what am I left with? There are things in our lives that function for us in the same way that cloak functioned for the blind man. And when Jesus calls, and the sign that really I'm ready to do business with him, is I said, okay, God is yours. If this relationship is not for you, okay, I'm not in my hand over. If my future plans are not what you want, sometimes he says to us, my son, my daughter, it's time to shed that cloak, that thing you've been clinging to. Let's stop again. There's another dimension to this story. So they call the blind man, cheer up. Come on, he's calling. Bartimaeus,
threw aside his coat, jumped up, and came to Jesus. So Jesus asks him a question. He says, what do you want me to do for you? And doesn't Jesus have any sense of the obvious? He's a blind man. This guy needs two or three people to guide him. So it's kind of obvious. But Jesus asks him that question. See, he only wants him to think about it. What do you want me to do for you, Bartimaeus? What do you really, really, in your heart of hearts, want me to do for you? You might think, well, that's an unnecessary question. But bear in mind, this is all that Bartimaeus has ever known. He's a blind beggar. And he gets out there every day and he says, take pity on me. Spare me some small change. Throw some coins my way. And with that, more or less, he's able to eke out a living. But Jesus is asking him a penetrating question. He'd say, oh, Christ wants to see you. But Jesus says, he looked at him. What do you really, really want? And Jesus asks us that same question. What is it you want? When you're praying and asking God for things, what is it you want? What is it you really, really want? Oh, I just want God to help me through my exams, right? Okay, that's good. Good prayer. Oh, I want God just, what could it be? What do you really want me to do? And then the Bartimaeus, all this is, you know, how film sometimes the guy goes through all these, like another film within a film, it's only lasts a split second, but it goes on for like a story. He's caught with, you know, all the motion stops, he's caught in mid sentence or action, and he's reliving. See again. Or maybe he never saw, maybe he'd never seen before. And you might think, well, that's kind of obvious. But all of a sudden he said, oh, hang on, well, wait a minute here. If Jesus gives me my sight back, what am I going to do? I'm going to get money. I've never studied a trade. I won't go there anymore. Hey, my livelihood would be gone. And he's caught between this. Maybe I'll just dial that down again and say, look, after all, son of David, king, royalty, Jesus must have some money if he's got a name like that. Maybe I'll just dial it down and just, maybe, Jesus, you give me some kind of money, hope that'd be great. Then I'll, well, I won't have to beg for a while. Yeah, maybe I'll just do it. I don't give up everything. What am I going to do if he gives me my son back? I can't beg anymore. He's doing it all publicly, so I can't even pretend. For him to see again would mean not only that he needed the faith that Jesus could have would do, also needed the faith that he could be set off on a whole new life. A strange new life, a dangerous new life. So many unknowns. Jesus asks us this. Asking you now, what is it you really, really, really want? paths you really want. I think I'd really like to be corporate secretaries, corporate directors, something like that. I'd like, yeah, I mean, I'd like a life where you sort of go around the world doing business deals. Yeah, that's something. And then one day, one of those encounters, and Jesus was saying, what do you really want? What do you really want? And at the end of your life, when you look back, what do you want to achieve? I thought, you know what? I don't know. I'm too scared to make the wrong decision. What if there's something better out there and I aim for something that's less? The best. I mean, if you know about my life, you know what it's like now, you know what it's going to be like in 10 years' time, you know what it's going to be like in 50. So, you know, then I'll stop it. That's
scary. Right there.
What if he does what I don't want him to do? And I thought, what could be the worst thing of all? Imagine if I. If you made me a missionary or something like that, oh my goodness. No. So I fought it. No, I love you, Lord, but yeah, well, just I love you, but Sundays are fine. Okay, so now maybe I'll throw it for dinner. That was when I was 22, the Lord, he just broke through. I guess it was a conversation, with, you know, not like you and I having, but it was a. And what came through was, Lindsay, you don't trust me. I thought, yeah, I don't trust in Jesus. I see Thomas, I trust in Jesus. I thought I was. I really thought I was. But he said, no, because you're too afraid that if you give me the keys to your life, you give me the steering wheel, then I'll steer in a direction that really you don't really want. I thought, yeah, that's right. So right. And then, there was this choice. And Bartimaeus had that choice. Do I just ask him for some money? Or do I say, no, I really want to see. I want to see. I know it's going to ruin my livelihood. I know things are going to change. My whole life's going to go and take a whole new direction. It's scary. I don't know what's going to be involved. And I don't have any control. And I want to know it all now, but I'm not going to. I know you're not going to tell me. Do I just ask for So here he is between the two. And he thought, well, hang on, I've left the cloak. Let's go for the big one. Jesus, I want to see. I don't care what the consequences are. I want to see. I want to be free. Free to do what? I don't know. I know a new, strange, and dangerous world is going to open up. But I don't care. I was 22. I had a conversation with the Lord, and I really enjoyed the job I was at. I was in, working for a multinational company, and that was in February. By March, I'd left that job, hooked someone up, offered me another one. It was just that. Challenge me, just find out your resignation. Yeah, I will when I get the next job. He says, no. When you show me, I said, all right, my resignation, Lord, when you show me what the next step is. He said, no, no, I'll show you the next step. I'll take your resignation. And I'll see you. And anyway, long story short, the Lord took me to prepare for the mission field. He called me to be a missionary. Even the mission. Trust myself to make my own decisions. Lord, if you know me from top to bottom, and you know what's the best for me, and you know what my gifts are, what they're not, Lord, I trust you, and it's, even if it's scary, I just throw caution to the wind and get rid of the cloak, the cars, and everything. And I did. Spain. And it's a long story, but there I met a drug addict called Raul. And I had no inkling what a drug addict was or what he did. Or, and I brought up in the church. He even smoked a cigarette or drank any alcohol. So I was kind of pretty Mr. Clean. And I once put this guy before me and said, "Help him out. I'm going to pray for someone to come and help him." Lord, would you bring some experts in to help this guy? And I go out and I meet him every day. And the Lord said, "You know, help him." I said, "Yeah, well, I'm praying for someone to help him." And he said, "No, I asked you to help." Invited to your house. I'm not going to came to my house and he met Jesus. His name was Rabbi. And then Rabbi was so fired up for Jesus that he brought someone else along. So cold there, minus 30 degrees. But they live underground in the heating pipes underground that go from building to building. And they just pull a circle up and go down to escape the cold in the winter. Hooked on alcohol. I can't believe it's okay. Jesus is there. How did that happen? It's a group of went from Central from Batel to in Spain to India. They started work in India, and in India we started working in Mongolia. And how did that happen? Because in Egypt there was a Mongolian addict in a Christian conference. I met one of them. It's crazy. Now, I could have stayed. Put a good amount of money. But see, when you say, "Jesus, I really want to see. I want to see what you're doing. I want to be part of it. I don't care what it costs. I don't care what's here because I trust you. You know me. You know what's best for me." So you can trust God with your future. All those unknowns that you're going to worry about and make decisions about, he knows what's best. Now, to do that, you have to get to the point of saying, "Okay, I take my hands off. Oh, you do it." Now, maybe it probably won't be the same journey he took me on when I was taking on the story. But I looking back and I just think, oh, look, do anything, tell him a missionary. And the very thing I was saying I didn't want him to do was the very thing that has given me greatest happiness. So you think that I think we know what makes us happy, what's going to make us happy. We don't. Only Jesus knows what's going to really, really, really make us happy. But he wants you to risk. He wants you to step. He wants you to throw away the clock. Thank you. Lord, you know us through and through. You can take 20-year-old foolish salesman from Canada and take him across the other side. Do what you're doing, still do. And you do anything, anybody. And Lord, I pray tonight for everyone. I pray that no one here tonight will ever solve the day. Ever. And I pray for more than that. I pray that each person here will not only not serve the devil, but will take that risk of giving you the keys, the steering wheel of their lives. Say, Lord, you drive me wherever you want, because I trust you.
Thank you guys
very much for sharing with us. I know that some of you didn't get